to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson. What is the most important activity you do in your day-to-day life? What drives you on any given day? Many amongst us would say family, friends, or particular rituals. But increasingly, one of the most important aspects of American life is work. It occupies most of our time. For many, it shapes how we act with others. It gives us a lens in which to view the world. It can be the identity through which we even define ourselves. But work has changed a lot over the last century. And today, some people devote their lives to work as if it were their religion. They commit all their time, energy, and beliefs, even their identity, wrapping their significance and self-worth into the things they are paid to do. Writer Derek Thompson calls this phenomenon workism, and he's skeptical about its benefits. A little later in the hour, we're going to discuss a different aspect of work. We're going to explore where the labor movement is today and get into the politics of the labor dispute between the University of Michigan Ann Arbor and its graduate students. But before we get there, we want to talk more about work and how it's changed over time, as well as how workism operates in our lives. And we have Derek Thompson here, the man behind that phrase, to discuss it. Derek Thompson is a staff writer at The Atlantic and the author of the Work in Progress newsletter. He's also recently published a collection of his articles in a book titled On Work, Money, Meaning, Identity. Derek, welcome to Detroit Today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So, Derek, since you're the man who's looked at work so much that you can compile a whole book full of articles on it, let us know, what is work today and how has it changed over the last few centuries?
I start this book off with a six-word history of work for the last maybe few thousand or several hundred thousand years. And that six-word history is from jobs to careers to callings. And what that six-word history means is that for the vast majority of our time as a species, our jobs had no sense of internal progress within them. Most human beings have been subsistence farmers through the species history, and that means that they did what their parents did, and their parents did what their parents did. And so the concept of work really had no possibility of self-actualization or discovery in terms of finding your dream job. There was really just one job to do, and it was the job of staying alive. Sometime in the 19th century, the invention of the train and the telegraph allowed young companies to be able to manage products and services and employees across an enormous continent, whether it was America or Europe. And that work required that they invent this new middle category of middle managers. It is actually a very strange fact of history that the concept of the middle manager is basically an invention of the middle to late 1800s. Well, the invention of the middle manager doesn't seem like it's a very interesting wrinkle in the history of work, but actually, this is a part of the invention of the modern corporation, where people sort of move into a job in their 20s in the mailroom or starting something that's quite boring, work their way up to middle manager or manager to award a series of acronyms, SVP, CEO. That's the concept of a career, and the word career had to be invented from the French word carrière, which referred to a carriage, something that moves forward. So the concept of work is something that moves forward in our lives toward this ascent toward a scarce set of acronyms. That is a new idea. But today, as you've already referenced in your open, I think that many people look to work not just to have a sense of forward progress in their lives, not just to keep themselves alive, not just to busy their days, but to define their lives, to be this centerpiece of identity. And that idea is what I call workism.
So let's explore workism and how it operates today. Can you please define it in your own words and tell us how people can see it operating day to day, why you think it's important to have this definition and how it works in our work field today?
I would define workism as a phenomenon that is especially concentrated among the upper middle and upper classes, where among a group that tends to see religiosity decline, they tend to be less religious in terms of their belief in an exterior God, tend to look to work to do the job that we've historically associated with an organized religion. for many centuries, millennia, we have looked to organized religion to provide community, to define our week, to define ourselves, to create a sense of transcendence and self-actualization, meaning, purpose, and that increasingly today, many people among this middle, upper, and upper class look to work to do this. Their desks have become their altars. And I think there are some ways in which workism reflects positive trends, that there are jobs today that are just a lot more fun than the typical jobs of, say, 150 years ago. You know, you and I are talking on the radio about the nature of life. That is a lot more fun than having to be a factory worker in Manchester, England at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. That's much more fun than being a subsistence farmer whose life and whose family's life could be wiped out by a drought or a frost. But I also think that as we wrap up our sense of identity and work, we might be incurring some dark trade-offs. We might be praying to a God that wants to fire us, that doesn't think of us as having any value outside of a capitalist system. And so throughout this book, I try to be very fair about the idea that workism is this fascinating phenomenon, and it has some positive and some negative aspects.
One, it is absolutely fun to be talking with you on the radio, so I'll grant you that one. But as we explore this idea of workism, and you mentioned it yourself, maybe it's not completely all bad, though you do mention there are negative aspects of it. So to the extent that this workism, as people are getting less religious, is filling up some other need or for identity in our lives, what alternatives would you posit could work for people if workism has its negatives? What would you say should fill that gap?
Right. I think I quote the great late writer Dave Foster Wallace, who said that if you take God off the top of the pedestal, people will still worship something, right? Something else has to go there. And actually, that's a very old idea. When the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche said God is dead 140 years ago, he said, God is dead, and that's going to create a problem for us because we're going to have to fill our lives with a new kind of meaning. So where might it come from? Well, it might come from community. It might come from leisure and hobbies. It might come from friends and family. It might come from our children or looking after our parents. The thing that defines us, the thing that is the answer to the question, what's your name? And what do you do, right? That second fundamental question in meeting someone, what do you do? Who are you? For a lot of people today, I think that they look to work as the default definition of who they are. And I think there are other choices. I think it's possible to define ourselves by a whole host of relationships to the world outside of our work. And one of the challenges for me as someone who really does love his job and could theoretically do this job, which is just writing articles and making podcasts and I guess compiling anthologies and books, I could work 100 hours a week easily. I mean, I could just continue to fill my time by sitting at my computer or even somewhat more nefariously, when I'm spending time with my wife or my family or my friends, thinking about my work, not being fully present, still working in my mind, even as I'm surrounded by my friends. I think that we can make different choices. We can choose to prioritize different things and bound work in schedules, make jobs that could be, you know, 9-to-9 jobs, 9-to-5 jobs, and fill the rest of the time by fully plunging ourselves into our hobbies and our friends and our communities, et cetera.
We're speaking with Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic and author of the Work in Progress newsletter. He's also recently published a collection of articles in a book titled On Work, Money, Meaning, and Identity. And I like that you brought up that last bit of information, especially because when I'm talking to people, I kind of bristle sometimes when they say, what's your name? What do you do? Like that defines me. It does make me bristle a little bit. However, I also think, especially broadcasting here to you from Detroit, it's real easy for some people in certain classes who are like, hey, no matter what happens, I'm probably going to be okay financially to have this kind of higher minded idea of workism versus the folks who sometimes maybe they're thinking of things this way or kind of they have to get by, try to get ahead. The people who are on the grind, single parents out there, folks who are barely trying to make ends meet. Does this idea of workism and maybe getting anything out more, how does it operate for folks who maybe don't have enough time to sit around thinking about things and drinking coffee?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question. And it's such an important question. I think it's something that some people misunderstood from my original essay on workism, or maybe I just miscommunicated it. So let me say two things. One, there are lots of people for whom a job is just a job. And that's okay. I'm certainly not judging it. But I am pointing out that for many people, especially the elite in the West, in America and Europe, and certainly in places like Japan and South Korea, work plays a role that is quasi-religious. And you can see this sometimes when you look at polling. You ask people, say, with Pew polling or Gallup polling, what's the most important value for your child? Well, very recently, they did this. And what finished higher than tolerance, community, marriage, having children, even making money? It was working hard and enjoying what you do. So even in these surveys, we find exactly what I would consider to be the primary definition of workism, the idea that hard work and liking your job isn't just one of many important values to be included in the portfolio of values. It is the cardinal value. It is the Zeus value. That is really, I think, a remarkable thing that is worthy of our attention. The second point to make, though, is that American public policy, I think, is infused with workism. What does that mean? Well, think about the way that we try to correct income inequality in this country. Well, we have this thing, the Earned Income Tax Credit, which might be one of the most important anti-poverty policies in the country. You have to work to qualify for the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit. Does this country offer parental leave? No. Does this country offer national paid leave? No. We are one of the few countries to not offer these things at a federal or national level. And in fact, most of our anti-poverty programs flow through work. We want to make sure that people are above all attached to the workforce. So I would argue that even people who aren't individual workers are still playing inside of a system, a kind of civic game that was designed by workist elites.
Yeah, to break the system up, you'd have to just kind of reframe everybody's understanding and interaction with work, which is really interesting. And considering and looking at your series of articles or your collection, and just speaking with you now, it's obvious you've been thinking about workism for a long time. So as someone who's thought about it more, and this is introduced to new people listening now, how has your study of work changed the way that you interact with your work?
It's a wonderful question. And I think the answer to it is that understanding that I myself am a workist has made it easier for me to put up a wall between my work identity and my other identities. So one of the things that I caught in myself, especially when there's a project or something that I'm working on, you know, it's a book, an article, a podcast, it's really consuming me, is that it sometimes makes it harder for me to be present with my family or with my friends. I'll be at someone's house or I'll be in the kitchen making dinner with my wife. And outwardly, I'll be in the world of life and not work. But inwardly, the self-talk in my head, the words happening between my ears, my thoughts and even my mental images will all be about my job.
Looks like we might have lost Derek Thompson. You're listening to 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin here, filling in for Stephen Henderson. And as we unpack the ideas of work, how our relationship as a society interacts with work, we also want to hear from you. 313-577-1019. Again, the phone number here, 313-577-1019. Do you enjoy your work or do you prefer to work as little as possible? And do you find meaning in your work, or is it simply a means for an end to you? What do you think of this concept of workism? Do you think it has a positive effect on us together as a society, or do you think that it is overall a negative for us to be worried so much about work? Is work filling a gap in some of our lives? We want to hear from you. 313-577-1019. Again, the phone number here is 313-577-1019. 877-1019. In fact, we're going to dive a lot into the world of work today, as we have, like I mentioned for you a little bit later, we're going to take a look at what's been going on over in the University of Michigan, why grad students there are on strike. That's going to be pretty interesting to get into. But right now, we want to return back to our guest. How are you doing there? Looks like we lost you a little bit, but I got you back right now. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just
okay,
great.
Fantastic.
You know? Yeah, all right, good.
Yeah, I believe I was in the process of explaining to you how I sometimes struggle to get away from work, and as if it was motivated by an evil spirit, my work computer literally shut down because I was talking about the challenge of sometimes getting away from work. So maybe I should talk a little bit more subtly and surreptitiously to trick this this thinking machine.
OpenAI, ChatGPT, Derek, it's listening.
Exactly right.
Go ahead.
I know it is listening. But in any case, just to round out your very good question, you know, I've tried to be a little bit more purposeful about, mentally and cognitively being with people fully and making, you know, circumscribing work so that I work harder during the workday and, sort of play harder or play more fully during my leisure time. And just one more piece about that, because this is another essay in the collection. I've written that work and leisure today are both leakier than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that when we're on our computers working, we can also be looking at YouTube. But also when we're hanging out on a Saturday afternoon watching TV or a movie, we can be emailing. And so our work time can be more leisure-filled, and our leisure time can be more work-filled. And I do think that this is a problem of workism, because it means that we can never, sometimes we always feel somewhat sucked out of the thing that we want to be doing. We're a little bit sucked out of work as we're working, and we're a little bit sucked out of our leisure time when we're in leisure. And I do think that is an important problem to be solved.
Yeah, well, I don't want to selfishly keep you to myself, so let's see if we can fit in one call with your time, as I know you got to bounce on us a little in a little bit. But Mike in Belleville, go ahead. You're on Detroit Today.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for the call, for taking my call, rather, and very interesting topic. I think overall work can have a negative impact on people, as it can be stressful. And even outside of work, people are still stressed and worried about, you know, getting assignments done and such. And even just in planning. And think about it. In America, we work, 40 hours a week plus generally. So it takes up a lot of time away from family and from leisurely activity. So overall, it could have a toll on people, I think.
Yeah, I love that point. I give it to you, Jonathan. What is your response to Mike in Belleville?
Well, you know, I think that it's important to say that Americans actually overall do work less than they used to. We work less than we used to, and we should work even less than we do now. I am not one of these people who's afraid of technology and afraid of productivity. I think that we want to use technology to become more productive so that we can, in an organized way, reduce the amount of time that we have to work. People used to work a 6 or 7 day week. Then we had a law passed about 100 years ago that circumscribed that to a 5 day week. I would love to dream about a 4 day week. I would, you know, sometimes people say, you know, if AI starts replacing jobs, you talked about ChatGPT, if AI and automation start replacing jobs, we have, you know, 25% unemployment while a lot of other people will be working 80 hour weeks. I would much prefer to spread out those weeks so that we continue to have unemployment at 3 or 4%. But with unemployment at 3 or 4%, the average person is only working maybe 30 hours a week. That's much more in line with my kind of utopia.
Yeah. And, you know, thank you so much again, Mike in Belleville, for your call. Jonathan, before we let you go, we got one more call I really want to get on with you. Frank in Detroit. Go ahead. You're on Detroit Today.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Go ahead. Go on in with your comment, Frank.
Hey, I just want to say, like I tell my own children, work is work. And the thing is work can be meditative or it can be destructive. Now, I got no problem with technology, whether you're making the cotton gin or creating a microchip. But if the work is productive and you can say to yourself, job well done, then you're not going to have any particular issues. But if you're doing work and it's not in the right mental set, you're going to have problems, man. You're going to have simple problems. You may have some health problem. You may have some mental issue. But if your work is not done properly and done conducive for humanity, that's the issue.
That's very thoughtful, Frank, in Detroit. Thank you for calling with that. Derek, I'm going to give you the last word on that one. What's your response?
I agree that, you know, technology is mercenary. the cotton gin or the microchip, these are tools that were used to do terrible things, whether it's, you know, prolonged slavery or create disinformation and, you know, control bombs that kill civilians. But also these technologies made millions of people richer, gave millions of people, billions of people easier lives, and allowed them to accomplish things that were impossible without that technology. So, yeah, I love the caller's perspective and agree that technology is fundamentally mercenary. Technology doesn't want anything. It is always a human tool, and it is up to us how we use it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you again, Frank, for calling. And Derek, I got to say, you're making me think of John Keynes. Hopefully, this iteration of futurism, ChatGPT, maybe we can get that 15-hour work week. We could all just work less and let the machines do a little bit more. But I know you got to get out of here. So Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic, thanks for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
When we return, we're going to break down where the labor movement is in America right now, with strikes and union organizing happening with Starbucks, Amazon, and so many other places. What does it mean for us in 2023? We'll check in with Merrick Masters and you when Detroit Today continues.